Heads up. All right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to My Worst Date. I'm Cassie.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Christina.
And we are back with another episode. And we have, just like we always do, this is why our podcast started with us just getting into talking. Because this is what we do. We start talking before the episode. And everybody, we're like, man, this is good topic of conversation.
Right.
We're talking about clothes. We're talking about fit. We're talking about fast fashion. Mm-hmm. These are things that I think every person, every woman who's in the dating field can understand and relate to.
Yeah. Listen, I had three outfits that were fucking fire when I was dating. When I was like, I fucking know I look good. Yeah. It makes you feel confident. It makes you feel like a goddess, a queen. Amazing. Now, COVID hit. And I was lucky to spend COVID with an amazing gentleman who also happens to love to cook. And that's what we spent COVID doing is cooking and eating and cooking and eating and having a bottle of wine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. anything that makes you feel halfway human and feel good.
Right. And no shame because we were all surviving like the worst thing, you know?
Absolutely. And like, listen, I am to the point where I love my body. I don't think it's bad, but to be frank, I am a 38 double D. Is a lot of boobies and so
tiggle bitties
and most things.
Girl, I think you need to be remeasured because I think you're bigger than that.
I do too, actually.
What, like cup size?
Yes.
Well, this is a double D. I'll show you.
Is it tweet?
It's gappy.
Oh, well, that's because boobs do this. Your boobs, unless you've had them done, don't. They don't give this stuff, but I really think you do got tiggle bitties.
I know, and it's hard. It's hard not to be like angry about it too, and feel like self conscious and stuff because nothing
as someone who's not wearing a bra right now because I have no boobies. I'm like, the grass is greener thing, right? Like, it took me a really long time. I am at the point now where I actually like having small boobs. I feel comfortable like going out without wearing a bra and I like it, you know, but there was massive insecurity like growing up, like not having boobs, especially since I have thighs and I have a butt. And so it made me feel like I wasn't balanced, right? Like I was like, I felt like there was something wrong with me, you know? So I feel like you get that kind of grass is greener always. Right.
Always.
But yeah, we were talking about basically like I don't fit into like anything from my wardrobe anymore. And I don't even have a outfit. If you were to say we're going to go out tonight, like, you know, dress up and go out tonight, I would have to go shopping. Yeah. I would have to. I have nothing.
Yeah.
Underline nothing. No dresses, no skirts. No,
you have that black dress I gave you, and I know it fits because
it does not
fire. Come
on. My boobies pop it open. It doesn't clasp. So, yeah, it's like
get you a cami, girl, and you're done.
I know I have to go shopping, but then the issue becomes where. And we were talking about fast fashion and how, like, for the most part, it like hits my titties and then just hangs down like I'm hiding a pregnancy.
I literally hate hiding a pregnancy clothes.
I do too.
It's the fucking worst.
I do too. This whole like loose garment thing that we have going on that's fashionable. I'm like,
I wish too.
I think it looks great
on
that picture.
Yeah.
And then I try it on and I'm like, womp, womp. Yeah. So, you know, we're... I mean,
well, especially with everybody getting back out there, going out again, going on dates again, going back into the office, you know, I feel like I don't like any of my clothes anymore. Like, I want to throw all of my clothes out and start over because I don't know. I feel like I'm a new woman coming out of this pandemic. And I'm like, I don't feel like any of these speak to me anymore. Yeah. And I'm just the most comfortable in like what I'm wearing right now, which is just like a band tee and jeans.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make me feel like
a goddess, like a queen.
Yeah,
like,
fierce and sexy, which clothes really, really can. Like when I feel put together, when I like done
that
my makeup my hair is hitting just right, when
it's
curling just right, and like I have an outfit that is like my outfit, I feel unstoppable. Like it really does. Yeah. It does something to your self-esteem.
But see, and I don't have an eye for it either. Like, I don't really know how to put on makeup. I know enough in order to get by. I don't know really how to dress. Like, I know that feeling when everything does come together and I know yes. it feels good, yeah. but it's really difficult. It's the same way that I felt when we moved into our apartment, Eric and I decided to buy all new furniture. Yes. So blank yeah. slate. Oh, I'm yeah. like, oh, fuck, I don't know how to do this either. Like, I feel like a blank slate, but like a blank apartment you know what you right like. Now. I
think
it's,
that
it's hard.
I We're really, gonna start slow. Really, really want to do this with you because it is my absolute.
I want to go. Let's go together. Let's buy one item.
Organizing.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's go find one thing that, like, just one that, like, you put on and you feel like you fierce and you feel great in that one thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then we'll find things that go with that one thing.
Yeah. What I'm trying to do though.
Capsule wardrobe.
Yes, yeah. absolutely. But also, if you've ever been in a position where it's just like, first of all, like, maybe I'm not super insecure about it, but I am. I'm like tall, I'm curvier and bigger. And sometimes that makes me feel a little insecure next to my more petite, normal-sized friends.
Oh, you are normal.
And
normal
so size. I do, if you've ever gone shopping with your friends, though sometimes it's like if a lot of stuff doesn't fit or doesn't look good in a row, it can be.
Bitch, I've seen you naked.
Be,
you got a banging-ass body.
It can be a little bit of a... Not traumatic experience, but it can be difficult. And I'm like, I love you guys, and I don't want to be sad or you know what I mean.
I do.
There's a definite right headspace that you need to be in when you go shopping too. And I think because we've all experienced that time where went shopping and you're like, wait, the curvy jeans don't fit me, or this thing that like
I have to get this size because like the way that we size things here is madness.
And it's different for every fucking company. Yeah,
we were just talking about my bra too. Do you know how many different sizes of bras that I own?
Girls,
you know, the one that fits me the best right now is a 36D.
It's not even a little bit.
No.
It's kind of why I don't like wearing them because I'm just like, the ones that I have that are
sports bra.
That are the only ones that I can really wear are like bralettes, mm-hmm. but those aren't quote unquote, and this is stupid too, then we need to stop this, but they're not professional. So you can't really wear a bralette to work because your nipples could still show through.
Yeah.
So you can't wear that to the office. So you have to wear a bra that has padding on it. But all the bras that have padding on it, because of the way I have a very like flat chest up top, like,
yes,
you know, right. I have a sternum. So the way that those fit, they gap a lot. And then they're uncomfortable because there's like that big gap there and they don't fit right. And so it's just like, I hate wearing. I would so rather not stupid. Wear bras.
For all of our male listeners. Yeah. Let me break this down for you. Imagine if every single day you had to wear a contraption that like pulled your
lifted
your balls up, and there wasn't a consistent sizing or, you know, there's different. You got the demi cup, you have the push up, you have the wonder bra
T-shirt
that really
bra.
Like pushes them together to give you that right ball cleavage that you're looking
for.
Yeah. Like, and it just depends. What are you wearing that night? Well, that's going to depend on what kind of ball bra you'll need.
Yeah.
It's fucking...
God forbid it's strapless. Jesus Christ.
Oh, you're like, fucked. You're spending the whole evening pulling at yourself.
Listen, best money I ever spent was getting my boobs on. I don't give a fuck.
Oh, my God.
I tell you what. To this day, hashtag no regrets. Not even a single one. Not one.
I hear you.
But... And you know what? Listen, I always was the person who's like, I'm never going to get my boobs done. That's so stupid. Why would you do that? And then I had two babies that made my boobs like literal minuses. Like they were just like feeding babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes a lot out of you. Yeah.
And there's a million reasons why anybody would want to do anything.
For sure.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So also, just... none of your business why I did it.
Yeah.
Happy I did.
There you go.
There you go.
That's all that matters. But yeah, the whole like clothes thing. I mean, for me, we've talked to you about like saving up and slimming down my wardrobe that I don't need all the clothes that I have right now, which are beautiful and awesome and have different memories. And I'm just like, they just don't fit anymore.
Yeah.
A lot of them, it's just like, because I washed them once and they were from Forever 21.
Exactly. Sure.
And oh, man. That's sad. That's bad for the environment. Yes. That's
by the way,
bad
before you throw
so
anything
people.
Away, just put it in a pile and let it
absolutely.
Go through it.
Because
I really do believe in recycling clothes, which is why absolutely. I rent the runway, which is why, mm-hmm. you know, for me, my closet, you've seen it. You ladies have seen it. I've got like literally the smallest closet of clothes.
And that's what I want.
Yeah.
I want those capsule pieces yeah. that's like, that fit fucking perfectly, because I am what I am. I may like slim down like 10 pounds or so, but at sure. this point I'm like, I'm 40. This is kind of feels like what my body is going to be for a while, you know, yeah. like in this range. I can find stuff that fits and makes me look good, but it's just the process of it is so
right.
like,
I mean, feeling
so daunting.
Because
tedious.
The truth is, like, feeling good is not a size.
That's right.
The thing that makes you feel like shit is that we live in a society that caters to a really unrealistic beauty
right.
standard. Yeah. That, like, that first of all, also comes out of fucking nowhere and makes no yeah. sense. Like,
right.
beauty standards shift every 10 years.
I'd be
so
like,
trying
I'll
to
see
adhere-
y'all bitches in the 1500s when I'm a fucking goddess.
Right.
I mean, who's to say in 20 years Rubenesque style doesn't come back? I mean,
right.
like, that's the thing.
I kind of feel like it is coming back, which is the thing. I really
but,
do.
But you know what? This current beauty standard, the Kardashian beauty, Instagram
oh, yeah,
model
that's
beauty
different.
Standard
yeah.
is equally as unrealistic.
Yeah, no,
because it's like
yeah.
nobody is shaped like that either.
In
like,
real
without,
life. Yeah, without help.
Maybe 2% of the population, right. you know? So it's not about a size, you know, in terms of like looking good or feeling good. Everybody yeah. is capable of feeling good at any size. It's just that society shames you and creates clothes that don't work for
yeah.
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 certain body types.
It's
like,
the reason I always loved What Not to Wear, because oh, they right. really were like about like, everybody's body looks great. You just yeah. have to find the right clothes that work for your body.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is we keep trying to look at Pinterest or Instagram and we're like, oh, I want to wear that because I want to look like that. Well, the problem right. is I don't have that body. So I got to figure out how to dress this body.
I would do the exact same thing when I was a little girl going into the salon to get my hair cut. And I would go in and show them the Jennifer Aniston
aww.
With my fucking hair.
Yeah.
My curly hair.
Girl,
and they're
listen,
like,
you know, I know.
Yeah.
Preach.
Yeah. Where I would go in trying to get like these like super stick thin, straight
yeah.
white hair.
Yeah.
And like, it just
yeah.
does not
that
work.
Ain't your hair. Yeah.
Because those are all the pictures
yeah.
that you see. So in that way, I guess it comes around to like representation
absolutely.
Matters.
Absolutely.
It matters because if I had seen pictures of famous people, like amazing people rocking natural curls,
yeah.
there would be more examples of what I could do with my hair.
Yeah, there were none. I mean,
no,
seriously.
You're right.
I like the curl movement, the natural hair movement like happened so much later on. Like it happened whenever I was really in my like early 20s was when
yeah.
it was like starting to pick up
you're
steam
right.
in the 90s and like through the 2000s
it was straight
and especially
hair.
If you were like alternative
oh,
I
yeah.
wanted to do like scene hair, I wanted to do like Hot Topic hair, right? And it was all like straight like Avril Lavigne
yep
you
yep.
know like
flat
straight
iron to death
and there were no examples of curly hair looking good. And in fact, any examples that you did have, and I point it out every time we do a Tainted Love movie episode like this, curly girls were considered ugly, a la like the Princess Diaries, where she had to have her
oh,
hair
that's
blown
right.
out
yep.
in order to
yep.
look beautiful.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Or crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a Fatal Attraction.
Yeah.
yeah
you know
exactly.
what I mean? Where it's like her hair got progressively curlier the crazier she got.
Yep.
You know what
right,
I mean? And it
right.
was never painted as like something that was
sweet.
You had
pretty.
To be like sleek and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, that's what beautiful was.
And it's,
you know,
it's the same with clothing. I do feel like there are definitely way more representation now than there were in like the,
uh-huh.
the 90s or
oh,
early
yeah, yeah.
2000s
oh, yeah.
of a curvier body type, somebody with boobs, with hips, you know, that
a figure.
It's
yeah.
just difficult.
Yeah.
You can't go to Old Navy.
No.
You can't go to, you know, no. like some of these stores. I mean, you can if you are adept at altering or knowing sure, what knowing to do to. With those clothes to adapt them to your body type. I'm not one of those people. Yeah. I can't. We've talked about it, like shop fast fashion and yeah. expect it off the rack to be.
But this is what I love about going to a really good thrift store too. There is this part of me that loves that anything that ends up in the thrift store, usually if it usually has to be of somewhat decent quality because it lived long enough to make it to a thrift store, right?
Right.
So you know you're dealing with usually typically good materials, possibly alterable clothes. So if you find something that you semi like, you can either style it to fit, style it to work, or you can have it altered to work and you're paying almost nothing for it. The alterations probably cost more than the actual outfit, which is fine. But it's something that lives with you forever.
Right.
And you're recycling clothes. Like, I don't know. To me, this is a really big deal lately. I'm just really into this idea of it's that old 90s kid in me who's like, thrift stores is where it's at. But
I think that the other thing that I need to learn more about, like educate myself about, because I got lucky when I started dating. I had these clothes. They fit. They made me look good. They made me feel confident. But I need to learn more about accessories.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know dick all about belts. Yep. I don't know the first thing about how to wear a belt.
Totally changes an outfit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know. In my experience, for the better, usually.
Earrings, necklaces, like any of those things. I do not know how to dress. But furthermore, I do not know how to accessorize.
Right.
So learning those things, I need to be able to accept help because I don't know what my issue is with being like, I'll figure it out. Or like if it's an insecurity thing or what it is. But I know that would make a huge difference in my confidence in having this body that's changed or whatever.
Sure.
And I know it would help me feel better if I learned these things.
I do tend to be big on like Pinterest, like coming up with concepts and like coming up with like I've sent you like the capsule wardrobe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I love like coming up with like just storyboards for like what I want my wardrobe to look like or storyboards for like, I like that idea. And I know that it doesn't work for everybody. Not everybody's a visual person. Like I need to see it. I need to see what that looks like and putting it together.
It's just like what we were also saying, which is don't look at it with the expectation that it's going to look like that on you necessarily.
Exactly.
But it can give you an idea of like, okay, if I can find a type of pant that I like on my body that's similar to this, then it gives me an idea of something I can pair it with.
Well, right. Pinterest is a really good way of like, because it's got so many resources that you can be like hourglass figure, curvy, accessorized belted dresses for curvy. I mean, like you can be so specific and really narrow down what you're looking for, which I love. I think that's
me too.
That you can get like, oh, that's my body type, and that's what I can somewhat realistically have an expectation
aspire
of what
to.
Yeah, that looks like, right?
Well, welcome to our fashion podcast.
I know.
Everybody who does not give a single shit about fashion is just like fast forwarding. Skip 30 seconds. Skip 30 seconds.
Well, it is a thing. I mean, and that's why I know on this podcast I've joked about before that I'm just like, oh, I just cannot wait until the future, until we all have to wear a uniform.
I hate that.
Yeah, it just shows you like how much like I don't like thinking about clothes. I just want them to
fit.
Well,
you know,
and
you could
good.
Go the Elizabeth Holmes, Steve Jobs route and just
really
all black just turtlenecks all the time. All black turtlenecks all the time.
I do look good in a black turtleneck.
I mean, and who doesn't, honestly?
Everyone does. People like to poke fun at black turtlenecks, but truthfully, everybody looks good in a black turtleneck.
It's
like,
solid.
It's a solid choice. Yeah. I am on board.
Oh my God. Well, who should we fuck, marry, kill this week after
let's go fashion.
Fashion.
I don't know a lot of fashion people.
Okay.
But I'm down to go down this route.
Did we do this route before?
We did. We did. But yeah, we could do different ones. We could do different designers if you wanted, because we did Betsy Johnson and
let's do
Tom Ford. Yeah, we did.
Let's do clothing stores.
Okay.
I like this better. Okay.
Me too, yeah.
Okay.
Been a while since we have done like a not a person. Like this. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to do Banana Republic.
Great.
Banana Republic.
That's a good one. They have some really great stuff.
They do. You know what?
Good quality.
I'm going to go H&M.
Okay. All right.
Well, in the spirit of who I is and how I shop, I am going Rent the Runway.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This is actually kind of hard. Okay.
It is hard.
Yeah.
It is hard.
I mean, I'm gonna fuck H&M.
Okay. Okay.
They seem like, I mean, they got a party side.
They do have a party
side. They
have
an office side.
Yes, it's business in the front.
It's business in the front.
That's right. Party in the back. It fully is.
It's a bullet.
I went in there the other day. And seriously, the first things you see when you walk in, I took a picture actually because I was just like, I don't know what kind of early 90s pretty woman like existence I'm trying to live. But there was a beige, like it was like a long line vest and like tall shorts. It was like tan.
Yes.
Like Bermuda shorts or something. It was like pleated. And I was like, I want it.
Oh,
and I'm like, but why? Yeah. Like, and where would I wear it to? I'll show you the picture because I took a picture of the mannequin. But it was all like blazers and stuff like that, and then you go like to the next room, and it's like that velvet
thought shit.
Like,
yes,
it's like tube tops, crop tops.
Yes, yeah. You're like, they can handle their business, they can pay their bills,
but at nighttime,
yeah,
they're going out with their girls.
We getting shots.
Yeah, hands
on the knees.
You're twerking. You're twerking.
Big hands on the knees vibes.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
You cannot do that with a Banana Republic.
No, you cannot.
But you can share a nice bottle of wine with Banana Republic.
Banana Republic's waspy parents will be watching disapprovingly.
They cannot.
They can't.
They cannot.
No. They see one video on Instagram and they're like, you must break up with her, Tom. Like,
Tom, we're taking the yacht out this weekend.
And I do think I have to marry Rent the Runway. I do think that there's enough variety to keep me interested. I think that I love their ideals and what they're doing and everything. So I feel like it's progressive and I think Rent the Runway is going to be that partner with you that can grow with you
over time, grow
and change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With you.
You're not locked in.
That's
with the Banana Republic, you're
that
locked in. Banana Republic has been Banana Republic for 30 years, right?
Yes.
They're not changing. Old money. And I like Banana Republic.
Yeah.
You can get some really nice pieces.
Amen. Yeah.
No shade.
Oh, no. It's one of my staple places for sure.
They're just a little inflexible. That's all. You know.
They have their mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's missionary with no foreplay.
Oh, no.
Let's
be honest.
There's what it is.
There is no cunnilingus.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So I think I'm actually going to do the same thing. Part of me wanted to marry H&M because you are going to have fucking fun with H&M. You really are.
It definitely seems like the one with the most adventure and sense of humor.
And H&M is gonna hold down a job. Like, H&M is gonna pay the bills. Like, they are, like, you're gonna live.
But they're irresponsible, let's be honest.
But they're irresponsible.
They probably litter.
I feel like it's gonna burn hot and fast. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if I married H&M, it would be real good. Like, it'd be so fun. We'd have the most bomb-ass wedding.
Yeah.
But afterwards, it's like we're gonna start bickering over dumb shit, and then we're gonna end up splitting up like 5 years down the line.
Yeah, H&M doesn't put the cap back on the toothpaste at all.
Right, the little things like that are gonna start to get you
little,
like, and everybody's gonna be like, "I don't understand. He seems so great," and you're like, "You don't get it."
But yeah,
you don't live with
H&M.
Exactly. Okay,
yeah,
but you don't live with H&M.
So I'm gonna definitely fuck them. And what? I think we're actually going to be like, we're going to fuck. And then even after, like, I'm in a serious relationship, we're going to stay friends.
Yeah.
Like, H&M is going to still come around.
That's right.
Like, he's going to be in your friend circle and it's going to be good. And that's the best way to preserve that relationship.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that. I am going to marry Rent the Runway because I do feel like all the things you said, Christina, they are going to grow with you. They're going to change with you.
They're there for all the big moments.
Yeah.
They're like, you need to go to a gala,
a wedding.
I'm there for you.
Yeah. Do you just want sweatpants?
Because
we actually have sweatpants.
Yeah.
You want a sports bra? I got a sports bra for you.
Yeah. You want to just relax on the couch? We got you.
Yeah.
You got to go to a big thing? We got you. Mm-hmm. Supportive, caring.
Socially responsible.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. I think, they're going to have really nice, socially conscious conversations.
Yes.
I feel like Rent the Runway would be the kind of husband who could have a conversation with your in-laws and disagree about politics, but in a way that's so nice.
Right.
Yeah.
That no one gets mad.
That's right.
That's the vibe.
That's big.
Wow.
So I'm going to marry Rent the runway. And yeah, I'm going to, you know, kill Banana Republic for no other reason than it just our lifestyles are not compatible.
It's just not compatible. And I respect you.
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah. But I respect you for what you are.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, and there was a time in my life that I really aspired to be Banana Republic.
Same.
And I'm just not there anymore. And I guess that my care level has dropped. I will not ever probably own a yacht, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But me and my responsible husband, Rent the Runway, will have a responsible canoe that we love to go out
in. Oh, yeah. You're going to kayak and pick up trash while you do
lake
it.
Lake house.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
And our lake house is actually all solar paneled. So we live. It's completely off the
grid.
You're
going to have friends over. We're going to make s'mores.
It's going to be so much fun, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the there's nothing to disagree with here. We've said all the things. You're going to marry Rent the Runway because it's the right choice. It's there for you.
Responsible.
If you gain weight, it's fine.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
If you lose weight, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. He loves you the same.
It's going
you're beautiful.
It's got something for beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. You're beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, and you gotta fuck H&M. Come on.
Yeah, I mean,
come on.
It's gonna be a fun time.
It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be H&M should sponsor our Palm Springs trip.
Yeah, for real. Because the thing is, you're right. Like H&M, it seems so put together, but if you've ever been in the dressing rooms at H&M, you're like madness. Like there's just like racks of clothes everywhere, and you're like, this is what living with H&M would be like.
Yes. Oh yes.
You nailed it.
Oh my god.
Forget it. I can't. Nope, you're right. It's a fucking move on.
Yeah. You guys want to take five and we'll come back with stories?
Sounds
good.
And we're back. All right. I've got the tainted love this week, so I will kick us off with stories. Okay. This one's fun. Kind of. I met a guy on Hinge who seemed pretty cool and we shared a lot of the same interests. I'm a self-proclaimed feminist. It's on all of my social media and dating app bios so that there is no confusion about this. A smart way to go.
Exactly. Go. Yeah.
If it really matters to you, put it in your bio.
That's right. Amen. Absolutely. Yep.
And he seemed to be on the same page politically and ideologically. When we decided to go on a date after a few days of talking, he let me decide where we should go to dinner and then after he would pick the activity. Seemed fair to me, so I agreed. I chose this little restaurant around the corner from my place. I picked this place because it had a little bit of everything, so there would definitely be something for him to choose from. We got there around the same time and things seemed to be getting off to a good start. He looked like his picture and conversation was comfortable enough for a first meetup. We get seated and after a couple of minutes of chit-chat, our server arrives with menus and a basket of bread for the table. Now, I hadn't eaten lunch, so I was starving at this point and was about to reach into the basket before it even hit the table when I heard my date say, no thank you. And he waved the bread away.
No. It's already done. If you are turning down free fucking bread.
No.
Bread, I knew this manna was gonna... from the heavens. Bread is, Christina, first of all, amazing. Oh my God.
And don't speak for me.
I knew that this story is going to trigger you both, but Christina especially.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I am like already. I love it. Your face right now. You are like hot.
Dude, it's like I will go to restaurants sometimes because I'm like, they got that good bread.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hell yeah.
They there got are that good bread.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
100%. Like
bread you can buy anywhere.
But. I will go to Red Lobster.
Ooh. Cheddar Bay biscuits?
Exactly.
I make a mean Cheddar Bay biscuit.
I don't even like seafood.
Yeah.
So Cassie, if you want to make me biscuits and save me the trip to a place that smells like fish, I appreciate it.
Yeah. I got you.
The server was obviously confused, as was I, because he said, "Sorry, what?" My date replied, "No bread, thanks." And without looking at the server or I, picked up his menu and started reading. The server and I exchanged a sideways glance before he shrugged and took the bread away, much to my disappointment.
He's like, "No,
no bread. Wait." As soon as the server walked away, he put down his menu that I guess he was pretending to read and said with a look of absolute disgust on his face, I wish restaurants would stop serving that shit. Bread is complete poison for your body.
Okay.
Here we go.
Now, my family is Italian.
Oh, no.
See? Bread is essentially part of our DNA.
It's fucking life, dude.
I was gobsmacked. I mean, who doesn't like bread? Right. I get it if you can't have it because of an allergy or something, but poison? Come on.
Yeah.
Not picking up on the look of absolute horror on my face, he proceeded to go on a tirade about how all of our food is genetically modified, but especially bread, and everyone should avoid pasta, cakes, cookies, and all bread-related foods.
You're like, oh my God,
okay,
you
Mr.
are
Keto.
Sucking the joy out of everything right now. Like, listen.
And listen, people, live your life the way you want to, but why you gotta be? Why is it gotta be poison to me?
Exactly, exactly.
You don't know me.
Oh my gosh. Listen, people have legit fucking allergies. That shit exists.
True.
Yeah. It's real. They have to eat what they have to eat, and that's fine. But like, you don't get to decide what I get to eat.
That's right.
I don't have that allergy. Well, I don't share that viewpoint. And I want that fucking bread.
Yeah, it's not even that he has an allergy.
No.
Yeah.
He's just poison. Okay, cool.
Trying to find a way to contribute to the conversation, I asked, what about homemade bread?
No.
And he went on to say that homemade bread was only okay if made with raw flour and all organic ingredients. Otherwise, it was just as bad as store-bought and should be avoided. At this point, I'm trying to figure out how to get out of this date. I said, so you never eat pizza? The look on his face, he was horrified, appalled that I would ask such a question.
What?
He slowly, silently shook his head. He then went on to say that he had grown up in Canada and was happy to be living in the United States now, because at least when people eat bread here, he's not stuck being taxed with the inevitable medical bills that would result from their carb-related health problems.
Okay.
He was, quote, tired of paying for other people's negligence.
Wow.
From eating bread.
No, you guys. Listen, there are, that's the thing. You said it perfectly at the beginning of this story when you're like, if it matters to you, put it in your bio.
No bread.
If you are somebody that is passionate about the food that goes into your body, because that's fine. Some people are. Some people are super into fitness. Some people love to run 5Ks. Some people are like, I love to make smoothies in the morning out of kale or whatever.
Yeah, there's a strong passion coming out of him for this.
Exactly.
Like, you know, like,
that's fine. Put it in your bio.
Put it in your bio.
Like, I'm very passionate about eating healthy or living healthy. That's completely fine. And there are tons of people out there that he can match with that he doesn't have to steal bread from.
Good luck finding someone who will consume no bread-related products ever.
No pizza. Ugh. Yeah.
Ever.
We're done. We're done. Because that's the thing. You don't want to date somebody like that if you don't share those views. Because anytime you took a bite of something, you'll feel very insecure. You'll feel very... It will lead to disaster.
Bad places.
Sounds hideous.
And yes, because when the server came back to the table, I think I was white as a sheet. My date ordered a salad with no croutons, of course, and dressing on the side. At this point, I was terrified to eat in front of this bread-hating maniac, so I ordered a small cup of their most bland soup and a water. Because, you have to be scared. Yeah. Like, you're like, I can't order a cocktail. I can't order, because you, at this point, you've got to be nervous that he's going to be judging, like, absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Ugh. When it arrived, I wolfed it down as quickly as I could. He didn't seem to notice or care about my discomfort. And after the meal, he was eager to take me to the activity he had planned, which was supposed to be a surprise. I did not want to spend one more second with this guy and definitely didn't want to see what his idea of a surprise date was. I told him I wasn't feeling very well.
We're going to run the Boston Marathon.
And like, no. Like, no. But we're going to watch a documentary about why bread is bad.
Oh, totally.
Thank you.
I downloaded this documentary for us to watch.
We're going to sit in my car and watch it on my phone.
Oh, God.
I told him I wasn't feeling very well and would have to cut our date short. He protested, saying we were having, quote, such a good time, but I insisted I needed to go. Once I got home, I sent a quick text letting him know I didn't think we were a good match, and then I blocked his number. Life is too short to spend it with someone who hates bread and doesn't believe healthcare is a human right.
Yeah. There you go.
Goodbye.
Perfect.
Goodbye.
Well, my story is another lesson this week. Mine is also the lesson in put it in your bio.
Oh, there you go. There's a takeaway. Put it in your bio.
Matched with this girl a couple years ago on Tinder. Conversation was great, and I knew she was a real person since we had a mutual acquaintance from long ago, so I was sure she wasn't a catfish. We seemed to hit it off right away. However, we couldn't get our schedules to match up for a first date initially. 2 weeks later, I had bought tickets to see John Wick 3 with my movie buddy. When my movie buddy dropped out at the last second, and I was stuck holding an extra ticket for later that night. In a last-ditch effort to not go alone, I asked if she wanted to go, knowing it was a super last-minute, a late-night showing, and we had yet to meet in person. To my surprise, she said yes and agreed. I would pick her up in a few hours before the movie started. I go to pick her up that evening, park by her place, and text her I was there. She replies, 1 minute, and I suddenly get a call from my movie buddy apologizing again for having to bail. I told him, no worries, I have a date lined up and she's on her way to the car currently, so I have to go. She opens the door and gets in, and just as I was hanging up, or she gets in the car just as I was hanging up, so I didn't notice anything right away, but as I turned to say hello, that's when I saw it. The biggest baby bump I'd ever seen. She decides to come clean that she was actually 6 months pregnant and had failed to mention that anywhere on her profile or during our prior conversations out of fear that she'd be judged.
Okay. The thing is, we discussed this in our last episode.
Yep.
It's not about quantity. It's about quality.
That's right.
Somebody will want to date you.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just be honest, because then you're going to, like, if you're not, you're going to end up in situations like this, and it's really not fair to the other person. Like,
yeah, it's going to make you feel like shit. It makes them feel like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just shitty.
I mean, it's just awkward too.
Like, it's awkward.
You're completely not expecting this, right?
Right.
Better yet, she still lived with her baby's daddy, but him and his new girlfriend were moving out, so it was totally okay. I wasn't sure how to react so in the moment because I was so caught off guard, but the movie was starting soon and I didn't want to waste the ticket, so I just went ahead with it. But boy, was it super awkward. Safe to say, things never went past the first date. The kicker was, a couple months later,
the baby.
But sorry.
I see what you did there. A couple months later, I'd seen her again on another dating app, but this time her second profile picture was her ultrasound photo with the caption, quote, looking for a daddy.
Oh,
so at least, she's being honest now, I guess.
I mean, but okay, maybe not like that.
Oh, God.
No, no to any of that.
So you're saying that's not how she should be? Okay.
Okay. Maybe focus on the new thing in your life for a little bit.
Right?
Yeah. Maybe take a breaksy.
A breaks. Yeah.
And get right back out there.
Yeah. I don't know. I was super horny when I was pregnant, so maybe.
I have actually heard that as well.
Oh, hey.
I was like 9 months of just doing it.
Nice.
Wow.
All right. Well, mine kind of weirdly aligns to like what we were talking about earlier. So I'll just dive in. Okay. First, a little introduction on me, and then the next paragraph is the date. I am not a good sign reader, so most of this is probably on me.
Oh.
I'm a big guy, but not horribly big, just a little bit more trouble in the stairs kind of big. And I get stressed easily. This leads to intense heat bursts and obvious sweating.
Aww.
And I'm bald. So no hiding that sweat under your hairs or whatever. Just those very visible, shiny little drops on my head. And when I sense my heat rising up, I feel anxious because I know a couple of minutes from now, I'll be looking all weird and sweaty. This causes a hellish, vicious cycle. So I go to her apartment in midwinter, minus 20 degree weather.
Oh, wow.
Dressed in shorts and a t-shirt to help me out battling those anxiety-induced heat rushes.
Wow.
Yay. She lives on the third floor.
Oh, no.
I'm already sweating just thinking about how sweaty I'll be after those stairs.
Honey, no. I feel so bad. His anxiety. I hope he's seeing a therapist.
Hesitating to knock on her door. So I take a breather once I'm up. And when I'm in, I ask for her bathroom so that I could freshen myself up. Basic routine I've done countless times. Take off shirt, turn on cold water, apply it to my neck, armpits, head, face, forearms, then dry off and go back feeling fresh. But as I do this, I think, if I take too long here, she'll think I'm shitting first thing on a first date.
Oh, no.
That's a no-go. But if I leave too early, I might get hot too soon and I can't use the bathroom twice so early.
Oh, no.
And then I'll be stuck freaking stressing out already.
He's overthinking. He's an overthinker. Yes. Very clearly.
So much.
Yes. Like you don't need to, you don't need to think about it that hard. No. You really, 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 really don't.
I know. I'm like, are you me though?
Oh no.
I'm like, yeah. So
playing consequences again.
Feel exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I come out and meet her in her living room. That's also her bedroom. She has a couch in front of her bed, and that's where we sit to begin with. I notice the window is open in winter. Maybe she's hot. Maybe it's a trick to go under her covers at some point or say that she's cold, opening the door for me to warm her up.
See, again, he's really reading a lot every single thing.
She gets up from the couch and goes on her bed real seductively, looking back at me. Clear sign here. So I get up. But as I do, we keep going on our conversation and she says how she doesn't like to be touched by strangers.
Oh.
So I'm not about to jump in her bed after she said that, but fortune is in my favor for once. She has a cat house next to her bed with two cute little fluff balls.
Oh.
So I go and pet them instead of joining her. And I stood there for a whole 30 minutes.
Oh.
Petting her cats, after which she kicked me out because her ex was coming over, apparently.
Wait, what?
Oh my God. Man, I tell you, I cried in my car on the ride home after this fiasco.
Oh, he's two in his head. He's two in his head.
I know.
He's not a stranger. He's someone who's there for a date. She wouldn't have gone into her room if she didn't want him to come in there with her. Like,
yeah.
He's just way too in his head.
And I definitely wanted to share that story because I'm just like, dude, that mental monologue is something I identified with so much. I'm like, I do this because of this and this and this, and then it could lead to this. But if I did that, and then by that point, how much time has gone by?
And I can tell you, yes, as someone who also has a tendency to do that,
yeah.
It's not necessary most of the time. Like, most of the time,
absolutely,
you do not need to think that hard about this situation. I think a lot about the fact that some people do not have internal monologues, and I can't imagine what life must be like,
right?
To not have a constant, not have your voice
narrating your life,
narrating every single fucking thing you do,
or not even narrating, just popping in sometimes to be like, hey, do you remember really that Geo Metro that you first? And I'm like, wait, what?
Remember that really fucking awkward, embarrassing thing that you did like 3 months ago? Okay, bye.
Bye.
Like, oh my God, it's so true.
Just wanted to make sure you were still aware.
Okay. You did that thing.
Remember.
And that person, they remember. Okay, bye.
They remember. They don't remember, by the
they
way.
They don't.
They absolutely don't.
They don't.
Only you do.
Tell my brain that. Okay. All right, this story.
Uh-oh.
I first heard it on a criminal episode, which will, of course, be so much better than what I can do here.
Use your best Phoebe Judge voice.
So,
yes.
I'm Phoebe Judge, and this is Criminal. Okay, her voice is butter. But if you want to go listen to that, it is episode 166 over at Criminal. It's great. Of course it is, because Criminal is an amazing podcast. So I got a lot of information from that and a New York Post article.
Nice.
Okay. Let's jump right in.
Okay.
On November 12th, 2012, there was an abandoned house in Accomack County, Georgia, that caught on fire. When the local volunteer firefighters received the call, they didn't think much of it. You know, the house was old and no one had lived in it for years. And it was like a breezy, dry night. So they were like, hey, maybe some kids were like lighting bonfires or something. And, and the house went up. It's not that big a deal. Deborah Clark, however, who owned the home across the field from the abandoned house, was certain that it was something else. And when she placed her emergency call, she told the 911 dispatcher, somebody done set the house on fire.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So the firefighters put out the fire and they return to the firehouse where they start putting away their equipment and cleaning up. So, you know, they're just like, okay, it's like a routine night. We did this. We're going to get cleaned up. And then the way that it worked was it was all volunteer. So they would get a page on their phones or on their pagers. Mm-hmm. And then they would go into the firehouse. And then after they were done with doing whatever they were doing, they would go back home. Like right, no one really right. stayed at the firehouse. So they were getting ready to like go back home. But as soon as they start to get undressed, another call comes in. And this time, a woman is called to report that two abandoned farm buildings on her property were up in flames. Oh. So this was about 12 miles from the first fire. So the firefighters headed back out. As they were fighting that fire, a third call came in. Hmm. Another abandoned building.
Feels now, like a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Accomack County, Virginia, and the surrounding areas are small, and they're about an hour away from any metropolitan areas. So they're an hour away from Virginia Beach and some other city, and because of that, they don't have an actual fire department. Mm-hmm. So it's all volunteer all the time. Mm. And they average about two fires a week. They're at three. In one
feels,
night.
Feels like a lot.
That even sounds like you got a fire bug.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, feels like two a week seems high too, if I'm honest.
Maybe it was a month. Could have been. Maybe I took that my makes, notes wrong.
I mean, like for, yeah, I don't know. It's, but both I mean, feels high.
Or if we're talking about any yeah. fires, because maybe yeah. it's like, I think small fires happen. Yeah, maybe sure, somebody calls true. The fire department because they
accidentally
fire.
Left the stove on yeah, or something. Yeah.
Something like that.
Smells gas.
I doubt it's two house fire, like houses up in flames right. a week. You right. know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the next night, they had another. And then the next, they had another. And the local fire chief was starting to call around other local volunteer firehouses and asking if they've had fires as well. And they had. So he calls the fire marshal and he tells them, I think we've got an arsonist. Yeah. Right? Like somebody is going around and they're lighting up these abandoned buildings. Mm-hmm. There's tons of abandoned buildings
in this
area. I mean,
they're abandoned.
Yeah. yeah. So over the next 6 months, they would respond to nearly 90 fires.
Oh, wow.
Holy shit.
So there was an app in 2012 that would broadcast police scanner activity. And for a period of time, this small place, Accomack County, Virginia, was the busiest community on this app that was listening for police activity. It was ahead of New York City and it was ahead of Los Angeles God. Because everybody was listening, trying to figure out who this arsonist was.
Wow.
Because they were completely exhausting their resources. It yeah. was all volunteer fire departments and they're being called every fucking day, right?
Yeah.
And people in Accomack were terrified because all the buildings that were targeted were abandoned. However, there was real risk of neighboring properties. There's like all right. these big fields yeah. and stuff, neighboring properties catching fire. And for some people who maybe lived in less like well-kept homes that had like lots of junk outside or whatever, mm-hmm. they would put signs up that says someone lives here because they were afraid that the arsonist would think their house was abandoned wow. and light it on fire.
Yeah.
And there were Facebook groups with names like Who's Trying to Burn Down Accomack County? They started Jeez. Popping up and volunteer firefighters basically moved into the station, you know, because they were running on no sleep from being up all night fighting wow. these fires. And then because they were volunteer, they all had day jobs.
That's right.
So yeah. like they're working, they're fighting fires at night and then they're going into work the next day, like just not getting a break at all. So state fire investigators were brought in and they believed that it was someone local. So they made a list of buildings that the arsonist might target next, like abandoned buildings. They went to Bass Pro and they bought all of the camouflage tents they could find and they started setting up all night campouts with firefighters to keep watch in pup tents behind these abandoned properties with night vision goggles and walkie talkies, just hoping to mm-hmm. catch the person who was setting these fires. So right. they're like, all these volunteer firefighters are like sleeping in tents, oh like to God. Try and
before
try
they
and
have catch- to like go up and the next morning and sell insurance
exactly.
or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So after
going to the school,
and oh my God, Mr. Johnson looks terrible. after 4 months, so they had set up cameras. Law enforcement had set up cameras like all around Accomack, right? And they were motion censored in around these abandoned buildings. And when the sensor went off, they would get a like ping to their phones, and then they could go like check the cameras. So they got one after 4 months, and they went and looked at the camera and it showed a shadowy figure walking away from the scene of the crime. And from the silhouette, it was clear that, you know, to the fire marshals that it was a woman.
Ooh, unusual.
They were like, that is strange. It is unusual because women aren't usually arsonists.
No, yeah. Right. It's not common.
And so at this point, investigators had already kind of been working with this theory that there might have been two arsonists involved, a driver and somebody who was lighting the fires. And they speculated that it was maybe like a father-son duo or two brothers, but it never occurred to them that one of them would be a woman. Like they just, it hadn't occurred to them. Okay. So, Tanya Bundick was born and raised in Accomack County. Her family had actually been there for generations, dating back to the 1600s. She'd had a pretty rough childhood. She grew up in poverty with an abusive father, but even so, she was always popular in school and with her peers. She was 40 years old with two children and described as somebody who was like a really devoted mother, really good mother. She was always at school functions, bake sales, things like that. She was very likable, extroverted, and actually, you know, they called her like the queen of her circle. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, people just wanted to be around her. And in the evening, she was a regular at a local bar called Shuckers.
Yeah.
Where she
had all tracks.
Yeah, the tracks, right? Mm-hmm. Where she had lots of friends. You know, people described her as being like kind of magnetic. Like everyone wanted to buy her drinks. She was like that kind of
That's
person.
The kind of magnet I like to be.
$50 says friends in low places is on the box is. In
yeah.
that place.
It plays yeah. every single time. Yeah. Every night. That's how they close the night out. That's how you know it's last call.
There's a Joe Diffie on there. There's some Alan Jackson.
At the Shuckers. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So one night at Shuckers, she meets a man who's a couple years younger than her named Charlie Smith. And Charlie was described as kind of bashful and shy. He's likable, simple, kind of this like likable, simple screw up is kind of how he's framed. He had trouble with drugs in the past, but seemed to be turning his life around and people liked him. He was described as kind of like self-effacing, you know, and just, you know, I get this kind of like Eeyore-ish quality. Yeah, you know, with this guy. And he owned a body shop and was known to do like really good work. And he also volunteered with the fire department from a very young age.
Yeah.
And because of his knowledge of cars, he was very helpful to have on hand in any situation that required the jaws of life, because he knew exactly where the weak spots were, where, you know, you could easily get the car ripped apart or whatever. So Charlie thought Tanya was way out of his league. So he never approached her, even though they were both regulars at Shuckers. And a mutual friend approached him one night, or a friend of Tanya's rather, approached him one night and said, Tanya would like to have your number in her phone.
Oh.
So he was like, well, okay. Hey, then.
And he's like, I would like my phone number to be
also
in her
appear in her phone. That sounds good.
Also, I'm always wearing this shirt from now on.
Yes.
right.
I must be looking real good.
Yeah. Feeling soups fly.
Yeah.
So she called him. All of this sounds very like small towny to me. She called him later that week and asked him to stop by her apartment to help set up a new PlayStation for her sons.
Come
on by, Charlie. And after that, they were inseparable. And Charlie gave up his spot as a volunteer firefighter. He doesn't have time. Okay.
This is some small town.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Wow.
So Charlie moved in with Tanya and her sons. They got a chihuahua together and they painted their bedroom pink and purple, Tanya's favorite colors. They got Cassie, you're going to hate all of us. They got a joint Facebook account under the name T-Char.
Joint couple Facebook accounts
the worst.
The literal worst.
And not only did they have a joint couple Facebook account, T-Char, but they also wrote messages back and forth to each other on their joint account, which has got to be the most annoying thing.
I hate this so much.
My mom, well, my dad doesn't have a Facebook account. He has my mom's, where he goes on my mom's Facebook account looks like it's somebody that has a split personality, because it's like, it'll have those memes where it's like, I love my grandkids. And then it'll be like something about how, like, you know, something political right underneath it. And you're like, who is this person?
Yeah.
It's two people.
Yeah.
Because, and my dad, thankfully, has started signing. When he posts under under my mom, he'll .. sign his name under it, so you know.
Amazing.
It's just, like, just get
amazing.
Your own account. Like, why are you doing this? Like,
why are you doing this? It's hilarious to me.
Also, you guys live together. Why do you?
Dude, let me tell you. Okay, so I'm listening to the Criminal episode, and Phoebe Judge, in her Phoebe Judge voice, is reading one of the exchanges, and it's like, one post was Tanya writing, made chicken for dinner. And then underneath that, in one of the comments, it was like, char here, chicken was delicious, babe. And it's like, why? Like, you live in the same house.
And who else? Why are you posting it? Who else wants to know about this?
Who?
Anything. This is junk. This is junk.
Nobody cares that you had chicken for dinner. No one. There's no reason.
And literally no one cares if you liked it.
Yeah. No, this is not information that needs to be broadcast.
They're the worst.
To millions and millions of people.
No reason.
Oh, my God.
So Charlie, this couple is the worst. Like, it's the most. It's the least. The last kind of relationship I would ever want to be in. So Charlie had some spare space in his auto body shop. So he asked if Tanya wanted to start her own business and use the space. That way they could be together all the time.
Oh, no.
Which is unnecessary.
No, it's awful.
So Tanya took him.
I hate this. I couldn't hate this more.
You can.
Oh, I can if it's an essential oil business that she's.
It's not, but it's
close.
Herbal Life. So Tanya took him up on the offer and opened a boutique to sell going out clothes, and she called it a tiny taste of toot. I'm serious. Toot was her nickname that her dad had given her, and she called her clothing shop a tiny taste of toot.
It sounds like what happens to me every time I try anal.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That's how, when you want to dabble in, like, tossing someone's salad.
Yeah.
Like,
you get a tiny taste of toot. I'm fucking dead. Oh, my God.
Why would you think that's a good idea?
How would you, as a bank person, when someone's trying to, like, set up the LLC, not fucking laugh at that person and be like, are you,
I'm sorry, did you say,
absolutely sure?
Did you say toot?
Toot?
Did you, was, there's a lot of alliteration there. Did you say tiny taste of toot?
And why is it a taste? Why is it a taste?
Why is it a taste?
Oh, my God.
And why is it tiny?
Oh, God.
Why any of these things?
It's horrible.
Oh, what the and fuck also, is
it's
happening?
Like, it's an auto like body. It's an auto body shop / going out clothes store. Like, it's weird.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Is the auto body shop called, like, Bighorn or something?
Oh,
and it's
God.
Like, Bighorn and a tiny taste too. Oh.
I know I said I needed to go shopping. I'm going to put it out here right now that that's not a
not
place
where you wanna
I
go?
Think that would cater to what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
You don't want affordable going out
it
clothes.
It sounds like La La Rue or whatever it is.
Or LuLaRoe or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Lord. I said La La Rue.
So things are going great.
Things
Charlie
sound
and Tanya,
amazing.
You know, joint Facebook account. Pink and purple bedroom. Chihuahua. Tiny taste of toot. Things are going well.
Stop saying that.
So Charlie... Charlie proposed at the end of 2011, and he was so nervous. So, like, he's the guy from your last story. Like, he's sweating. He's going in and out from the parking lot because he's so nervous to propose to Tanya. And he's so nervous that he ends up passing her the ring under the table instead of getting down on one knee like he had planned. And so Tanya said yes, but only if she got a different proposal. So they decided that he would repropose on her birthday at Shuckers in front of all of their friends.
Oh, no.
So they bought a yellow Barbie cake because Tanya liked it when Charlie told her that she looked like Barbie. And they coordinated their outfits matching yellow with the cake.
We really need to see pictures of these people immediately, sooner.
No, I need to know what they look like.
Okay, we're going to wait. We're going to wait. But I am like, I feel like I know, but I need to know, you know?
Yes. So they started planning the wedding. Mm-hmm. And
they wore yellow?
Yeah, they had to match the cake. Uh-huh. Why the cake needed to be yellow, I don't know. I don't know, Cassie.
No. It's a lot is what I'm feeling.
It's a lot.
And this is coming from somebody who has like neon green hair and neon green yellow nails right now.
I mean, it's a big taste of toot at this point.
It's
full yellow. I mean, I like yellow. I love yellow, actually. Okay. But
think of yourself in a yellow outfit.
Okay.
Okay. You got that. I can get that. I love you in yellow. I can see
this. Thanks so much.
Now imagine you have that outfit on and Tony also
same shade, yellow, and the cake, yellow. A Barbie cake.
I'm having a really hard time putting a man in a birthday. Full yellow outfit.
Right.
Well, maybe it was just a yellow shirt.
Even still.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Also, he's a redhead and I feel like red and yellow.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot. Okay. But so they start planning the wedding and they wanted a big wedding.
Of course.
300 guests.
Holy shit.
It was going to be.
Are there 300 people in this town?
It was going to be the party of the century.
I guess.
Like she told people, even though invites hadn't gone out yet, that they should respond as soon as possible because security was going to be tight.
I mean, I guess a tiny taste of toot is going well. Doing if they can afford.
Toot toot.
They wanted to have the reception at Shuckers, which I did not picture
for 300 people.
Maybe it's a big place because I did not picture it.
I pictured it as like the barrel.
Yeah, like quirky.
Yeah.
The wedding theme would be
of course
November Rain after the Guns N' Roses music video. In which I think the bride dies.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I'm like, can I actually steal this idea? I mean, if Eric and I took that seriously, if we did like, oh my
please
God.
Please do that dress.
Oh my God.
That dress with just like a mullet. It's nothing. Short in the front and long. Lasts
forever.
I have never heard of someone doing a wedding theme based on a music video in my life.
If you're going to do a music video, at least it's one with a wedding in it.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Wow.
So, Charlie was said to have done anything to please Tanya, clearly.
I mean.
He wore yellow.
Yeah. He painted their bedroom purple and pink. He re-proposed to her. Even if it meant working all hours and picking up odd jobs to try and afford the large wedding that she wanted. And if anyone criticized Tanya in any way or questioned whether she was asking too much of him, he cut them off.
Oh. Okay. A goodbye.
Yeah, he's just like, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Tanya's an actual angel walking on earth. So, okay, back to the fires. Forgot all about the fires.
You gave us a lot to literally, like, I'm like, what fires? I'm still
Our
on
fire is important
a taste
anymore.
Of two.
I swear to God, I can't not get past Taint of Two.
Taint of Two. Tainted love on Taste of Toot.
Okay, so the fires, they're raging out of control.
Yeah, right? That's going on too.
Yeah, sure. No, that,
she wore a shirt. That's how they found out. It was like some Taste of Toot on it. They're like,
So at one point, the arsonists burned down an old abandoned resort that took the firefighters 6 hours to put out because it was like a whole resort. Why are there so many abandoned buildings?
Where are the 300 people coming from?
Out of town. I don't know. Virginia Beach. They're coming up from Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
Norfolk. Everybody. Newport News. Everybody coming in.
The next night after, you know, this one, they set another fire and the firefighters were getting burnt out. No pun intended.
Oh, yeah. That's then.
I'm sorry. I typed it and I was like, I have no other. You're like, I have no other way to phrase this, but that, you know,
they're stretched very thin.
There you go. On April 1st, 2013, some men who had come up from other parts of Virginia to help out and volunteer, they were camping out in one of the pup tents when they saw a van pull up to the abandoned house they were watching. A figure gets out. It runs up to the building, pulls out a rag and a lighter, shoves it under the board and lights it on fire before running back to the van and driving away. So the volunteers are like, finally, right?
Yeah.
They radio it in and police pull the van over half a mile from the scene. Charlie and Tanya are in the van and they were taken in, separated, and questioned separately about the situation. Tanya said that they had been out for a drive, which is something that they often do, just, you know, back road driving. Mm-hmm. When Charlie asked if she could stop the van so he could get out and pee, which she did. And then for some reason, because you do this when you let someone out of the car to pee, she's like, I'm going to do a lap. So she left him there, she says, to pee, did a lap, and then came and picked him back up after he was done peeing. Huh. And that she had no idea that he had lit the fire or if he had lit any of the other fires, right?
Huh.
So when Charlie is questioned, he basically comes clean immediately. So he's being questioned. I mean, it's a small town, so he knows these people. Like, they probably went to high school together. Like, the people who are, like, questioning him. So he basically comes clean right away.
Yeah, he's like, I can't. It's a burden. I can't carry it anymore.
He's like, I'm a simple man. All right. I did it. So he comes clean right away, and he admits sole responsibility. He takes all responsibility, right?
Because, you know, T isn't the kind of person who's going to take a promise ring.
No.
Nor is she the kind of person who's going to take any of the heat.
No. Yeah. So the men questioning him, you know, like I said, they've known Charlie pretty much his whole life, and they know he's holding back, and that, you know, they suspect he's trying to protect Tanya. So they keep pushing him, and they want him to at least tell them what would push him to do something like this, right? They're like, look, we've known you for a long time. This doesn't seem like who you are. Mm-hmm. So, like, why would you set almost 90 fires?
Yeah,
you
know? What you doing, bro?
Yeah. So after hours of questioning and around 2 in the morning, he finally breaks down and tells them why he's setting all these fires. So he starts telling, I know, he starts telling the men. So, right, they're like, why are you setting all these fires? He's like, okay, I'll tell you. And they're like, all right. They're leaning in, like Cassie's leaning in now. And he starts telling them about how much he loves Tanya. And they're like, cool, cool.
Yeah.
What does this have to do with anything? Right. And he's like, I know I'm a good for nothing. I know that Tanya is too good for me. Mm. And he's telling them that he's terrified of losing Tanya, right? He's like, I've had girlfriends in the past. I never felt like I was really in love before meeting Tanya, and I'm so in love with her. And he couldn't believe his luck that he landed someone so incredibly out of his league, right? And he speculates that his disbelief at having landed someone like her manifested itself in a terrible way. And he told the cops, the moment I fell in love with her, my dick stopped working. So he couldn't please Tanya sexually. And by the time of November 2012, the two hadn't had sex in over a year. Ooh. And Charlie was very, very afraid that he was going to lose Tanya because they weren't having sex. You know, and
you know, they have doctors,
right?
Yeah. In Virginia.
Medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
in Virginia, they have doctors.
So one night they were,
I mean, you want to get that checked
out. You should figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That could be medical.
And yeah.
I need you to work on that.
Yeah.
You know, it won't help.
Well, so one night on one of their drives, Charlie tells Tanya, like, I will do whatever you want to make you happy. Like, I just want to make you happy. I don't want to lose you. Right. And so as they're driving, they drive past this abandoned house and Tanya says, I want you to burn that house down. So Charlie's confused. He thinks she's joking. And so he laughs, but she's insistent. And she says, I want you to burn that house down. So he pulls over, still kind of thinking that maybe she's joking. He gets out of the car. He walks up to the house. He pretends to set it on fire. And then he gets back in the car and tells her that he's done it. And he says for the first time in a really long time, Tanya seemed happy, that she seemed lighter somehow, that she was joyful. Whoa. About the fact that he had set this fire, right? And so, you know, she kept in asking him, you know, they get back in the car, they start driving, and she keeps asking, I want to drive back around. I want to see the house. Like, she wants to see it on fire. And so eventually, of course, he has to admit to her, like, I didn't actually set it on fire.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know that, like, you really wanted me to set this house on fire. And so she was deflated, like, exasperated, disappointed, gutted, right? So he's hurt now. Like, he's like, oh, I don't, you know, she seems so happy. Like, I don't want to, like, upset her. So they drive back to the house and they light the fire together and burn the house down. And they would burn down 66 houses after this.
Wow.
Wow.
And it's not clear why setting the fires seemed to make Tanya so happy, but it did. It seemed to be the only thing that did. And whoa. The funny thing was, it didn't actually help their sex life. It's not like,
no.
It's not like they said, because, you know, I think some people tie, for some people, like, it is a sexual release, like pyromania, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is like a sexual thing.
Yeah.
But it didn't fix his.
Well, yeah, because it's not his thing.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's not like they were now having sex. Right.
Right.
But they,
if anything, it's even worse for him. He's like, I am now nervous.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They didn't go home after this and have no. like passionate like sex from having right. done something like crazy together, right? So the couple still weren't having sex, but I think the fires were like a substitute for sex, right? Like, it's yeah. something they could do instead, like, together instead of
yeah.
having sex, something that would bring them together. So for Charlie, it was all about Tanya. To him, she was this smart, beautiful woman, and he didn't understand why doing this made her happy. But if it made her happy, then would keep her with him, then he would do what it took, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He said in the beginning, Tanya would light the fires herself and he would drive the van. But at one point, she almost got caught and he couldn't stand the thought of her getting into trouble. So he started lighting them instead and she started driving. Of the 86 fires that were lit, Tanya set the first dozen or so and Charlie set the others. When asked if there were fires that Charlie liked more than others, he replied, I hated every night.
Oh,
so he didn't want to be doing it. Like, that's, you know, aww, what he said.
Charlie.
So they both were held at the Accomack jail, and it was described as like this really tiny jail where the janitor's closet doubled as like the visitor room. Like, that's how small this jail is, right?
Yeah.
But they were held in separate areas, you know, the men's area and the women's area. But they would communicate by leaving each other notes in chapstick tubes in the jail yard, like mm-hmm. when they were taken out during the day. And in one note, Charlie wrote, I'm really scared that if I get too much time, I'll lose you. I don't think you really know how much I love you.
Aww.
Eventually, Tanya was released on bail and the two would write each other frequently. In the letters, Tanya expressed that she still wanted to marry Charlie, even if he went to prison for a long time. In the letters, though, she doesn't explicitly say it. She kind of indicates that she wants him to take the blame for, like, she's like, tell him you were alive. She doesn't say it, but it's kind of like indicated that, like,
she sounds awesome,
right?
I hate her.
Yeah, I mean,
so much.
There are also, like, I guess some of the things she said also kind of indicated that she thought if they were married, then they wouldn't be able to testify against each other, right?
Yeah.
So Charlie, for his part, refused to testify against Tanya in the upcoming trial. That is. Until the sheriff visited Charlie in jail and told him that Tanya was seeing someone else.
Oh no.
On the outside. And so Charlie was like, no, not my Tanya, not my toot. I don't believe it.
Like, let me log into our Facebook.
Yeah, let me see. God. But then the sheriff produced graphic letters that Tanya had written to another man while she was in jail. Like, she was in jail, she was writing letters to this other guy on the outside, like graphic sexual letters. So at this point, you know, Charlie's heartbroken.
Aww.
He, like, truly heartbroken. He's devastated and he reluctantly agrees to testify against Tanya. So Tanya was arrested again that December, and she was charged with 61 additional counts of arson.
Damn.
Yeah. Because of the fact that every person in Accomack County had been affected by these fires.
They couldn't hold the trial there.
Right. The trials had to take place in Norfolk, Virginia. So Tanya's lawyer asked that each count have a separate trial, which I've never fucking heard.
Holy shit. Like, 51?
So it'd be 62 61. Separate trials.
No.
Right? I guess it was granted. So they get in, they're starting these trials, right? And on the first count of arson. And when Charlie, who was just totally defeated and broken and sad, testified against her. So he testifies against her. And then Tanya testified in her own defense. And she continued to claim that she had nothing to do with the fires. And it was all Charlie the whole time.
Yeah.
So after they both testified, it became clear that things didn't look good for Tanya. Like, her defense team was like, Charlie came across as, quote, believable and kind of dumb. The prosecution had done a good job of painting Tanya as the ringleader, entirely capable of manipulating someone like Charlie. Right?
Right.
So it didn't look good. So they recommended that she take an Alford plea, meaning that she acknowledged that there was enough evidence to convict her without having to plead guilty of the crime.
Right.
In the second trial, so number two of 62, the defense put a new character witness on the stand for Tanya, who said that she was, quote, brutally honest, and it would not be in her nature to set fires or to lie about it. But it turns out this was Tanya's new boyfriend.
Oh, well.
Oh, God.
So she did not put in an Alford plea for this trial, and the jury found her guilty. With 60 trials ahead of her, she decided to enter Alford pleas for all remaining counts. She's like, for the next 60 counts, I'll put in an Alford plea because I don't want to go through this and be found guilty.
Right. Who's got the time? Somebody's got to be a tiny taste of two.
Right.
Right.
Running that shit.
Right.
So she was sentenced to 17 years total. And 2 days later, Charlie, who had owned up to everything the entire time, was sentenced to 15 years. So she actually got more time than he did.
Yeah, barely.
Yeah. Charlie is finally no longer in love with Tanya. Aww. After years of waiting for her to come back to him.
Aww.
She didn't. And so he's finally moved on. Years later, the residents of Accomack County would talk amongst themselves about the fires and say that they had been lit for sex. But Monica Hesse, who wrote a book on the case called American Fire, Love, Arson, and Life in a Vanishing Land, corrects this story. And she says, quote, the fires were not lit for sex, but for love.
Aww.
Okay. I mean, it's true, even though it's fucked
up. I really
want
to know, like, what Tanya's motivations are, though.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's
manipulation.
Very.
It's control. You will do this because I asked you to do it.
That's probably.
Yeah, it's a manipulation tool. And she feels like she probably gets something out of, like, him doing it because she asked him.
Doing something illegal. Yeah.
Because she asked him to.
You're probably spot on with that. That sounds like the most plausible explanation.
Yeah, there was someone, I don't know if it was in the New York Post article I read, I don't know if it was a psychiatrist or if it was like a local sheriff or somebody, was speculating about it, and they were saying that they felt like maybe she felt like her life was totally out of control because Tiny Taste of Two wasn't doing very well.
Well, I know, and I don't believe that. Here's what else here's what else I can't believe. I can't believe Phoebe Judge said Tiny Taste of Two.
She did.
In her Phoebe Judge
voice. I know,
voice.
And somehow and I classed feel like it up.
She am I listening to that immediately just on the way
that.
Home?
Just yes. to hear that. Mm-hmm. Just
absolutely.
To hear Phoebe Judge say Tiny Taste of Two.
I believe the episode is called On Fire, so yeah. It shouldn't be hard to find. But yeah, I mean, they said maybe it was like she was feeling really out of control. It was a control thing. It was just like she felt like she could have control in this one way because the rest of her life, I mean, she's engaged to a man she's not having sex with. Her store is failing. I think her kid was having some kind of like problem at school. And this was something that she could do that she felt like she had control over. And like,
wow.
And maybe also what you said, like she had control over Charlie too.
Yeah. Wow.
Know? So,
wow. That was a wild ride.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
I heard it on Criminal and I was like, oh, I'm writing this one down.
Yeah, I love that podcast too. I really do. They find it's such an intelligent way to find these really interesting stories about criminality just in general, and it's fascinating.
They have one on the guy who did all the spirit photographs.
That's interesting.
Yeah, like where they were like, how did he do it? And like, you know, got away with, you know, selling all these spirit photographs. It's a great podcast if you haven't listened to it.
Yeah. Well, what are you guys watching this week?
I'm not watching anything else. I haven't watched anything else.
I haven't either. My week was just insane. Like, I was so busy this week, and I just started back to school, and it's just, I've been in it.
Well.
Oh, okay.
I am a nerd. I am a huge nerd.
But not a BattleBots nerd.
No.
No.
Okay. Ish. It's growing. It's growing on me. But I have been waiting what feels like my whole life for this to happen. Okay. And that is for the Netflix adaptation of The Sandman.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Which is coming out later this year. You guys, I got the first volume of the comics, Preludes and Nocturnes, when I was 13. My dad got it for me. And I've loved that series for most of my life. I reread it every year. I'm obsessed with it. So I follow it. I have alerts set so I can learn all the news, everything. Well, what I hadn't done to this point was listen to the Audible.
Oh, nice.
And so finally, like, I know your husband, Chris, he was like, hey, are you doing that? And I'm like, no, like, just audiobooks for whatever reason. I've never really latched in. I really am a visual reader.
Yeah. And that is a very visual. It's a graphic.
Yeah. And I'm like, how would that translate? Well, I went on Audible. I got it. And I've been listening to it all week while I've been working, you know, doing copy paste. So I have the advantage of doing something that I don't need to pay that much attention to at work. And I can pay attention to this. I cannot recommend it enough.
Really?
It is outstanding. It's like all these different voices. James McAvoy plays Morpheus.
Nice.
Riz Ahmed is the Corinthian. It's so well done. It's so great. And it's like 16 hours and it's just like the first few books. Yeah. So there's like two more installments that'll be coming out on Audible. Of course, it's the number one most downloaded audiobook
right
of all
now,
times.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, people are stoked about the Netflix thing. And I wanted to reread the books ahead of time. And then I was like, wait, I'll just check out this Audible thing. And I can't recommend it enough. So if you're searching for something, I was hesitant to how a graphic novel would translate into it. But it gave really cool insight into the way that a graphic novel is created, because Neil Gaiman had to write out the story, give it to the artist who would then draw. So a lot of what they're reading are the author's notes of how to illustrate the panel. They're like, Morpheus walks into a room that's blah, blah, blah. It reads, it's like a book.
Wow.
Oh, that's cool.
Really cool.
Oh, I would love to listen to that.
That actually sounds rad.
Yeah, it sounds dope.
So I'm so excited for the Netflix thing, because it is going to be different a little bit from the graphic novels, because they're updating it. Instead of it taking place in 1989, it takes place in 2021. It's not going to be like a faithful adaptation the same way that the audiobook is literally
just the actual book.
So have both. Have room in your life for both.
Why not both?
And so I'm living my best nerd life.
Love
it. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, hey, if you guys have something that we should read or listen to or watch, if you have stories, if you just want to reach out and say hello, go to our one-stop shop of a website. It's myworstatepodcast.com. Also, do not forget to like and rate and review.
Yeah.
And we love you so much.
Cheers.